jurors were sent to deliberations in the salacious trial of Samantha Hall, nicknamed Femme Fatale in the tabloids.
Charged with first-degree murder, an arguably risky charge given that the victim, Troy Singer, died of injury during a lone sex act.
Your verdict should not be influenced by feelings of prejudice, bias, or sympathy. Your verdict must be based on the evidence.
Samantha Hall faces a murder conviction in the death of Troy Singer, her submissive lover she instructed to hang with a rope in her absence, finding her responsible for intent, negligence, or reasonable conduct will be the difference between a first-degree, manslaughter, or not guilty verdict. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress.
The defendant has entered a plea of not guilty. This means you must presume or believe the defendant is innocent. The presumption stays with the defendant as to each material allegation in the indictment through each stage of the trial, unless it has been overcome by the evidence to the exclusion of and beyond a reasonable doubt. To overcome the defendant's presumption of innocence, the state has the burden of proving the crime with which the defendant is charged was committed, and the defendant is the person who committed the crime. The defendant is not required to present evidence or prove anything.
Please state your name for the record.
Samantha Hall.
Thank you. Samantha, how did you meet Troy Singer?
We met through FetFinder. He found my profile and messaged me, and when we began talking, we realized we had a lot in common. We both lived in Central Florida. I was living in Apopka at the time.
And Troy already had his house in Winter Park?
Yes.
What initially attracted you to him?
His intelligence and his wit. Troy had a very dry sense of humor. He made me laugh.
Was yours what you'd call a whirlwind romance?
Yes. It was fast. I believe we were living together within the first year.
I know this might seem strange, but the biggest thing that struck me about her was how normal she seemed. Like the way she talked, the way she described their relationship was, I mean, it just sounded like, you know, the way that I... you know, the way that I would describe my girlfriend.
Yeah. Well, and the whole time we've been watching her sit in court, she's just been completely relaxed and
stoic.
Poised. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Stoic. I mean, not like her lawyer. Yeah. Sweating and everything.
That was also very striking to me that she was so just calm and poised. It almost sounded a little bit to me like it was rehearsed. Because she knew exactly what she was saying. And,
can you elaborate on that? What about it?
She didn't ever have to reach for any answers. It almost was like she didn't have to pause to think about things. She was just ready.
That's what you call an intelligent woman, I think.
Yeah, she seems intelligent. And every defense attorney is going to prep their witnesses before they testify. I mean, that's what they do.
I will also say that I was caught off guard by how, like you said, how normal she looked. She, you know, she was dressed like any lawyer would look,
right.
or any working professional.
And maybe that says more about us when we were talking earlier about our own prejudice.
Well, she's not going to show up in leather and ropes.
Right. Well, no, I mean, I didn't expect that.
But like maybe piercings and tattoos.
Well, I didn't expect to see someone who would live on my block, I guess.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, doesn't that make you look at people on your block a little?
Well, and look where Troy lives. I mean, he's in a nice neighborhood.
Exactly.
I mean, we're not talking about, I don't know, some slummy area. Yeah, I mean, he's in a nice...
Was anyone else disturbed at all, again, by how calm and non-emotional she was?
I was actually just going to say what Steph said when she saw Stoic. I saw someone kind of put on the spot and a little... I don't want to say ashamed, but there's an element of being exposed to the public that she seemed to be filtering through a mask of being stoic, but she looked vulnerable to me.
Well, I mean, her whole lifestyle has been put on trial here. I mean, everybody's watching this and judging her. And she's never going to have a normal life again, regardless of the outcome.
So she didn't look compassionless to me, Carl.
But that could also be a little bit of a... you know, wounded animal act that she's putting on, because no, from some of the other things that we've seen,
she's up for murder.
She's up for murder, and it could be argued that if she did become over emotional on stand, if she cried and was melodramatic, that could be seen. I'm sure she would realize that would be seen as like, oh, I'm telescoping.
Yeah, wouldn't you call that rehearsed if she broke down in tears?
Exactly. Yeah. This happened not yesterday, so yeah, she's had time to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And also, she's a professional woman. She knows how to have a professional face in a professional
situation.
Yeah, I mean,
she's really smart.
But also, it was just weird to me how there was no fidgeting. She didn't pick at her fingernails. She wasn't doing anything to make it seem like she was even in the least bit nervous or uncomfortable.
No. Doesn't that mean that she's not guilty then? Doesn't that mean that she has nothing to worry about? The things you described from an episode of a procedural is things that a guilty person does on trial, fidgeting and being nervous. Those are things that a typically guilty person would do.
Not necessarily. There's an old adage that they say in stuff like, if you watch two prisoners in jail, the one who sleeps through the night is the one that knows that they're guilty, whereas the one who's rolling around and is upset and everything is the one who's frustrated because they're innocent.
Carl, you're not watching her sleep. You don't know that.
No, but I'm just saying that body language can speak volumes, and her body language to me was someone that was very controlled. Yes,
control.
I think
we also have to be cognizant of our own personal biases, and are we projecting what we think a guilty person?
Well, and we talked about this before with the phone call, is like, maybe this is her personality. I mean, you know, maybe she is a very controlled, reserved person. She keeps her emotions under check.
Well, it seems like she would have to.
Exactly.
Given what she does.
This type of lifestyle. So, I mean, like you said, Dominic, I don't feel like we can project what we think she should act like, because we don't know, because everybody responds to situations differently.
I think there's a section of us who is looking at each of these individual things, like, for example, body language, and we're looking at it in an isolated vacuum, mm-hmm. and we're just saying, is this enough to draw conclusions from? No. And then there are people like Carl who are stringing each piece together, and it's filling out a puzzle. But to me, that's confirmation bias, that like, you think you know what the outcome is, and you're looking to add this piece to that puzzle that you've already put together in your mind. Whereas I'm looking at this as an isolated thing, and this mm-hmm. cannot body language cannot be.
But you
any
can't
part
you can't look at it isolated.
Reasonable
let's go
doubt.
Back to what one of the. I don't remember who said it, but somebody at the beginning was talking about, somebody during the trial was talking about circumstantial evidence, mm-hmm. that if you look at any individual piece of evidence by itself might not mean anything. But like, using the example of the kids, if you look at the fingerprints, the cheesy fingerprints, mm-hmm. and the Cheetos wrapper and something else with him, and something else, those things together paint a very descriptive picture of a crime that happened.
Was her body language submitted as evidence in this trial?
No, but I'm just saying to his point. Yeah.
That's fair.
To his point, I don't think that we can look at things individually. We have to consider the enormous body of evidence at this point.
But
and I think her body language and her demeanor are part of that.
Let's see here. Did people see a murderer in her body language?
Well,
I feel like
you're never going to.
Well, and I feel like
she's not going to come in with an
But I feel like if she.
Then why are we talking about
it? But I feel like if she wanted to induce sympathy, to produce sympathy from us, from the crowd, she would act sad and remorseful. I mean, you know, maybe she would put on an act because she wants to create
also,
a more sympathetic image, and
already,
she didn't do that.
We've established how smart she is, that she's used to role-playing, and that I think she would know what would be most effective in this situation, that we'd all say it was ridiculous if she was screaming and crying.
Was your relationship what you describe as happy?
Very.
We've seen a number of flirtatious correspondences between you and men online that seem to indicate otherwise.
No. Those were stupid, harmless interactions. I never intended to meet any of those men. On that website, flirtation is sort of the language. everyone inhabits their role, whether it's dominant, submissive, something else, whatever their role is. That's how they present themselves to others. My flirtation was meaningless, and Troy knew about it.
Troy knew you spoke to other men this way?
Yes.
The frequency of your visitation to FetFinder.com and the number of your online messages increased during the fall and winter of 2015, during your last year with Troy.
Yes.
Why?
Being a dom invites a lot of pressure. Troy and I enjoyed his reverence of me for so long, but I'm human, and Troy is smart. Was smart. Over time, he couldn't help but see my cracks, see the way in which I was stitched together. I loved being his top. I wanted to maintain that control. If I felt it slipping, I'd take it back. That fall, he stopped calling me mistress and began using Sam more and more often. I detested it. Keeping our relationship real was important to me. FetFinder was a rich resource of information, yes, but energy. The people on that website and discussions they posted, it all motivated me, excited me. The times I was most active online were the times Troy and I were privately happiest. Those were the times I was most creative. The holidays in 2015 were an exceptionally happy time for us. I remember coming up with code words. If I used the word weather while we were out in public, he'd know I planned to beat him when we got home. I made him wear a device under his suit one day at work. I picked out his clothes for him, and he wasn't allowed to take off his tie at night until I got home and used it as a collar, a lead, before taking it off myself. We had fun. I made him report everything to me, what he was doing, to whom he was talking, what he was eating. I remember on New Year's Day, I didn't like what he had for dinner, and I made him throw it up.
Samantha, when you say something like that, are you aware of how deplorable it sounds?
Yes. It sounds cruel.
It sounds horrific.
It wasn't. He liked it. Obviously, he didn't like the act of making himself purge, but he liked the control it gave me. I liked that too. It's the way we were.
What happened on May 1st?
He left for work earlier than I did. After he was gone, I ate breakfast, and then I went to our playroom. I rigged a Faramond hitch and hung it from the hook in our ceiling. I placed our footstool underneath it.
Why did you use a footstool?
I had to, because I used an adjustable knot. I had to make the loop large enough for him to put his head through. But then as he tightened that loop around his neck, it would increase the slack of the rope hanging from the ceiling. So, in order to create tension in the rope, I had to start him up high.
Wouldn't it have been safer to have arranged his feet to stay firmly on the floor the entire time?
Yes. Obviously, it would have been safer. But I don't believe Troy would have lived even if his feet had been firmly on the floor.
Why not?
Troy could have survived if he had pulled the safety release. He didn't. I believe that's because he didn't even try until he had grown too weak. And if he was too weak to pull a cord, he would have been too weak to stand up.
Miss Hall, I'd like to review the text you sent to Troy on the night of his death. State Exhibit 26. Can you read that?
Objection, Your Honor. Admitted. This has already been read for the court.
Your Honor, I plan to question Miss Hall on the content of this text.
Overruled.
Please read the text, Miss Hall.
Go to the playroom. I have a setup waiting for you. Stand on the step stool while you get ready and then kick it away. Your toes should barely touch the floor. Hang until you're at the brink of unconsciousness and then pull to release the knot. Do not touch yourself. This isn't for you. It's for me. Send me a pic when you're done so I can see the blue of your lips and the rope burns on your neck.
You told Troy in that message to hang until he was at the brink of unconsciousness. Did you not?
I did.
So aren't you then responsible for his weakened state?
No, I'm not. I also told him to pull the release. He needed to have the strength in order to do that.
But when you tell someone to hang until the brink of unconsciousness, Isn't it inherently understood that they would be weaker and have less cognitive function?
I didn't mean that part to be taken literally. I was using bold language for dramatic effect.
But the part about wanting to see the blue of his lips and rope burns on his neck. Did you mean that part literally?
Yes.
Samantha, have you ever been asphyxiated in a sexual setting?
Yes, with a previous lover.
And what did you identify as being your brink of unconsciousness?
My hearing and vision would be compromised before I began to black out. That bleary sensation is the stage I was referencing in my text message to Troy.
And in that bleary sensation, did you have the strength and mobility to operate your limbs?
Yes, I did.
Miss Hall, you purchased a spool of jute rope on April 26th, 5 days before Troy died.
Yes.
That has been identified as the rope you used on May 1st. But you already had an abundance of hemp 6mm rope at your disposal. Is that correct?
Yes.
Why did you purchase a special rope for this one project?
It wasn't just for this one project. I wanted to start using a harsher rope with Troy so I could mark his skin more prominently.
What do you mean, mark his skin?
I wanted to see the rope marks, and I wanted them to last longer.
A rope bondage expert with whom you've studied testified that thinner ropes were used to tie delicate areas such as the face or genitals of your subject. But you used a thin 4mm rope to suspend a man by the neck.
Is there a question?
As someone who's been rigging for many years, Miss Hall, does that sound like good judgment to you?
Can you repeat the question?
Did you exercise good judgment when you chose to use a 4mm rope to suspend your lover by the neck?
I used my best judgment.
It's your testimony that your best judgment was to use the smallest diameter rope in your possession to create a neck suspension for your boyfriend.
Objection, asked and answered.
That's sustained.
One more thing, Samantha. Why did you call the non-emergency police line instead of 911?
I didn't know for certain something was wrong. I had a feeling, but that didn't translate to an emergency at that moment. Maybe Troy didn't get my text. Maybe he was on the phone. Maybe his phone was on silent. I was not going to send a ton of emergency vehicles with sirens blaring to our home for no reason. I'd be so embarrassed. But at the same time, I had a bad feeling, so I asked the police to go check it out.
Why didn't you go home and check it out?
I was 30 minutes away. The police could probably get there before I could, and honestly, I was on a deadline. Had I known for sure something was wrong, of course I would have gone straight home and called 911.
Miss Hall, I'd like to go through the timeline of your cell phone's activity with you during the time Troy died, just so we're all on the same page.
Okay.
7:20, you text Troy with your instructions to hang.
Suspend.
Suspend by the neck, yes? 25 minutes after that, at 7:45, you place a phone call to Troy's cell, which goes unanswered, correct?
Yes.
And then 19 minutes after that, you place a call to the Winter Park Police non-emergency line.
Yes.
Does it seem plausible to you that if Troy had been in serious danger, which in fact he was, your actions would have saved his life?
I didn't know he was in serious danger.
No. You had a feeling.
Your Honor, is sarcasm necessary?
Was that sarcasm?
No, Your Honor. Miss Hall, is there any way your actions on May 1st could have realistically saved Troy Singer?
Yes.
Calling a non-emergency line and requesting a welfare check 39 minutes after telling your boyfriend to hang by the neck offered him a realistic chance at rescue?
When I placed that call, I didn't think he needed to be rescued. If I believed he needed to be rescued, I would have called 911 immediately.
So what were you trying to achieve?
I just... wanted to know if he was okay.
You wanted to know if he was alive or dead.
Your Honor, may we take a brief recess?
Actually, I'm finished, Your Honor.
We're thick into fall, and winter is coming. Transitioning between seasons is tricky when you're shopping for clothes, but ModCloth has every clothing type available, and they're all stylish. Retro, contemporary, classic, all of it. Plus, they have a full size range from double X small to 4X large. And if you want to make it even easier, which I always do, hit up their team of mod stylists for free sizing, fit, and styling help. Go to modcloth.com and enter promo code DELIBERATIONS at checkout to get 30% off any order $100 or more. That's modcloth.com and enter code DELIBERATIONS. Warning, it's easy to get obsessed with this site. Back to the show.
You may rely upon your own conclusion about the witness. A juror may believe or disbelieve all or any part of the evidence or testimony of any witness.
What did you guys think about what Samantha said?
It's honestly just getting frustrating for me at this point. Yeah. I mean, like, what more can we see that makes her look as if she did it? She actually tried to claim she didn't know he was in serious danger.
She didn't.
Well, she didn't. How would she know
that? She wasn't
there.
Because she knew that the rope was dangerous.
No,
she
just
said
look
that
at it from an objective, totally objective fact.
I am looking at it from objective
did
facts.
Did she know for a fact that he had hung himself at that time?
Well, the
yeah,
other thing
she knew that
we know,
she knew
did
that
not.
He was in danger.
Yes, exactly. She did not know that he had hung himself.
The way that she talked about it, it seemed like she assumed that he had gone through
assumption,
it.
Carl.
No.
Let's look at all the facts.
The way that she talks about it, it seems like she assumed he'd gone through with it because she didn't know if he'd been hurt or not. She never mentions at one point, I don't know if he even did it or not.
Well, yes, she did.
She
said she absolutely mentioned that. She said his phone could have been on silent. She didn't know if he got her text message. So she did address the fact that she didn't know if he'd done it. But the thing I thought was interesting is she said he wouldn't have lived even if his feet had been on the floor because he didn't even try to release himself.
Right.
That really stuck out to me.
Yeah, and that's her putting it entirely on him.
Exactly. Yeah.
Just like you're putting it entirely on her.
Yeah, I got to say, he texted her that he ate a turkey sandwich. He texted her that he is drinking a whiskey soda. He never texted her saying, about to step on the footstool, or I got the noose around my neck, or I got mm-hmm. the rope around my neck, looking forward to seeing you tonight. Like, he never gave her an update. The last she knew, she sent him these instructions and then heard nothing.
Yeah.
So I don't think she knew he was in danger. She knew that something was off.
Because I feel like you're right. I feel like he would have been the type of personality to text her every step that he was taking to heighten, I guess,
but
in this relationship, to heighten his pleasure.
That he do that. She said, send me a text. Exactly.
She said, send me a text after. She didn't say, send me a text when you're doing it.
She also didn't ask him to send the text about eating a turkey sandwich.
But and she also, in the text, ordered him to pull the release, and he didn't.
I will
because
say
he wasn't physically able to do it because she tied the knot wrong.
And because he was there by himself.
Exactly.
Because she put him in a situation where there was no there was no fail-safe in case things
well,
went south.
Well, and that's what we keep getting back to, is he wasn't, if she wasn't there. Yeah.
She did you guys hear her slip into present tense talking about Troy and correct herself?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That made her seem very human and sad and remorseful, and someone who predetermined to kill him and wanted him to die would revel in the past tense of Troy.
I don't buy that either.
But she also said that she got upset in the past when he started calling her Sam.
She felt like she was losing control
because,
as the Dom.
Sounds
right,
like the
because
relationship
it
was
seems
getting
to her like the Dom sub part of it was more important than Troy and Sam.
But it also, on the flip side, if you want to, you know, argue the other point, it means that maybe he had more control than we think he did. If she was feeling a loss of power, then that means maybe he had, you know, and going back to the sub being in control, maybe he had more power than we're giving him credit for.
She made him throw up his dinner. That, if that's not absolute control, I don't know what
maybe
it is. Like,
that's
what else,
my own prejudice yeah. coming
what,
up.
What else
that
could
was
she
pretty,
make him
that
do that demonstrates
no
more complete
no.
control over another human being than forcing them to throw up their
and
dinner?
And she said she thought, you know, that if she was losing control, she
exactly.
would take
so,
it back by
right.
killing him.
But take it back.
That struck
I
me.
Wait,
I agree.
Take it back
by killing him?
Did
what?
What are you saying, Janet?
I wrote notes here that she that maybe she felt like she was losing control.
But
so
she didn't say she was going to take control by
no,
killing. Okay,
right.
well,
no, but she said she needed
to
take it back.
She's very specific about your language, though,
right.
because
well,
you
that was a mistake. I'm human.
All right.
Well, okay, but if you know that your partner likes when you look a certain way, and they all of a sudden stop looking at you because maybe you've let yourself go. You're going to go to the gym because you want to please them. So this is, we need to again think about the BDSM language. Mm-hmm. And this was her trying to please him. And her seeing that he was looking at her in a different way and that she needed to assume the position of the dominant for his sake.
No, she said she wanted to take control back. And she said it in a way that she wasn't happy she didn't have control. It wasn't about him. And she also said at one point, when I think she was talking about the rope, that she said one of the reasons she wanted to get it because she wasn't satisfied with what they'd been doing, which meant it wasn't extreme enough for her, that she wanted to take it further. And I think this goes back to not being satisfied with the fantasy anymore.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to start
right.
acting more and more on these darker,
maybe.
More intense
But look at the
things.
Safety precautions she built. I didn't think about this in the text when we first discussed it, but she says, this isn't for you, it's for me. So by that instruction, by her being the dominant in the relationship, he shouldn't... This, to me, illustrates that she was worried that he would take it too far. So she made sure to tell him, this is not for you, don't touch yourself, this is not for you, it's for me. So I think that was her... trying to control the situation.
That's a complete misreading of that.
I don't know.
I
think that brings up a really interesting... I hadn't thought about it that way before, but
something
I think that brings up a really interesting
really
point.
Really struck me about her testimony was when she kind of cracked when Lowry asked her about if she had, you know, maybe put him in danger. I forget what the exact questioning was, and... She used
good
her best
judgment. Right.
Yeah. And I think that she had a moment where, I mean, I think we saw a very honest moment on this stand where, you know, she had thought she'd been using her best judgment in trying to please him. And then maybe
she didn't answer it, though.
Because she said she used her best judgment.
Well, the question was,
did she use good judgment?
She took a big pause because
I think she took a moment to recognize.
Well,
that maybe
I think it was her calculating, and she was
that's
trying.
What I think
she was trying to calculate how can I answer
how am I
this that doesn't
say
incriminate
this?
Me.
Exactly.
This whole every court case is calculation every second. The lawyers are calculating their words. Witnesses are calculating their words.
I noted that's the only time that she halted with any of her answers until a little bit later was a slight pause. But it's because she had to take a moment to say. How can I answer this that doesn't make it obvious that I did?
Because
this.
We're picking apart every single word she
totally
says. Why would you blame
why would
her
she,
for
why
being
would she
careful?
Pause that long?
Earlier
if
you
she
were
could,
complaining
she
that she wasn't fidgeting enough and that she was too calm, and now, oh, heaven forbid,
no,
she pauses.
No,
now
I'm
that
saying,
shows
if you look
guilt.
If you look at the whole thing, she's very calm. She answers everything right away except for this one question because she knew that if she answers it honestly right away and says, no, it wasn't good judgment— that makes her look guilty. So
right.
that's a moment of calculation. I think it shows it's indicative of what a calculating,
that's why she said repeat the question.
Determinative person
she also
that she
could
is.
Have been, she was concerned about how she was going to appear to the courtroom. Again, we're talking about a woman who
right.
is very embarrassed about her lifestyle, you know, in the public. And maybe in her mind, she did think she was using good judgment, but because most people don't understand that lifestyle, she knew it wouldn't come across that
but
way. And so she said best
judgment.
If she's
innocent, if she's truly innocent, and this was on Troy, there's no harm in her saying that she used good judgment because in her mind that she
well, but
really
maybe
did.
As her,
she would automatically say, yes,
yeah.
I used good judgment.
And then try and prove why she used good judgment.
Right.
But, she's
but she can't prove that because
yeah.
she didn't.
Exactly.
And she knows that.
Well, if she said, yes, she used good judgment, I'm sure you'd find something wrong with that too.
Yeah.
I mean, will you ever give her any benefit of the doubt?
Well,
can you agree that she has brown hair?
Yeah.
Yes.
You do know that.
Thank you.
Maybe she dyes it. I don't know.
Just given everything that we've seen from her, everything that she said, all this evidence, it's just frustrating for me at this point because I don't know what more you need to see.
You
I don't
haven't
know
given
how
me
you
one
don't...
clear motive. We, our job, as Mason just read, is to assume her innocence, until we're proven otherwise. I don't think you
beyond
ever assumed
doubt,
her innocence at
doubt.
All, Carl or Janet. I'm sorry. I don't think either of you ever yeah. gave her the benefit of the doubt to begin with.
I agree with that 100%. I'm mm-hmm. glad you said that, Mandy. Thank you very much. I also think we were debating about the sincerity of the phone call to police and why didn't she call 911. And I thought she answered all those questions yeah, very well. To my satisfaction, it all made sense. Whether it's what I would have done in those situations, I don't know. But I believe that as a human being, she exercised her best judgment in mm-hmm. those moments. And that put to rest a lot of my doubts about that phone call to the police.
I don't like to, I try not to curse, but I think those were bullshit answers.
You don't think it holds water, the fact that she said that she'd be embarrassed to send blaring sirens over to the house, considering yeah. the fact that they're
no,
closeted in their lifestyle?
Because if the person you love is in a situation where their life be at risk, then that trumps your embarrassment unless you're an extremely selfish, petty person.
Yeah, you don't even think about how is this going to affect me. All you want to do is get to who your loved one.
Exactly.
You don't think about how is this going to affect
me. Or how then she could have driven home. She said it took half an hour. She could have left immediately, gone to check on him. That would have been faster than the 39 minutes.
Yeah. Right. Instead, I was on a deadline. Like,
hey,
that's
that,
so much
no,
more
that is not. Don't mock that. What yeah. if she had missed her deadline because she drove home because she's panicked and she sees him asleep, or she missed something
but then
important?
Then she would have had peace of mind that he was
thank
okay.
God he's alive.
Yeah, sure. And then she could also like lose
know.
A job or a client, yeah.
but he would still be alive.
He would still be alive either
what's
way.
This is a life or death circumstance, and for her to pretend like she wasn't aware of the risks that they were taking is
right.
not.
I better go call all my loved ones right now in case one of them's in trouble, but I don't have no reason
well,
to assume
you,
they're
you,
in danger.
If you bought a dangerous rope and
no,
put them in a life-threatening situation,
no, if
then
I bought
you
them
should
a
check
rope
on
that
them.
I designed to be safe and they're using it for recreational
no, the
purposes.
Other experts, the other experts said that's not a safe rope to use.
My brother-in-law owns a snowmobile and sometimes he chooses to use it without a helmet, so I'm going to call 911 right
that's
now
not,
because
oh, that's
in 6 months
good,
he might get
on. And also you're not putting him in that situation.
Right.
It's not the same thing at all.
So if I bought him the snowmobile, then I am culpable.
Right.
That's a very good point,
no,
Mason.
It's still not the same situation.
I have a problem with the text message also, where she said she didn't mean the part of the brink of unconsciousness to be literal. When this guy was her sub, he took everything literal and to buy the book what she wanted.
Well, she also said the blue in his lips and the yeah. rope burned.
But she also told him to pull the release.
That is literal.
Well, and then she said, but she also said that she had had this done, not the hanging, but she had
breath play
before to the point of unconsciousness, and she was still able to utilize her hands and her arms. So having experienced this herself, she had a reasonable belief to think that even at the brink of unconsciousness, he would still be capable of pulling that rope and releasing that knot.
But wouldn't you want to be present to
well, and again,
yes.
and that
yeah.
still
I know
really bothers
I keep
me.
On
no,
that
and
point.
I totally agree
yeah.
with
no,
that.
It's
that's
a good,
my biggest concern. That's still my biggest concern.
And if anyone can present an argument against it, please, I would love to hear
no,
it.
No, I totally
think, why
agree.
Why do people sext with each other? Why do people do phone sex?
Well,
I mean, it's like
phone sex is not going to kill you.
Well, this wasn't supposed to kill you.
Putting him in a risky situation and not being there in case something goes mm-hmm. wrong. Correct
I'll
me if I'm wrong, but in the BDSM community, aren't you supposed to, you're supposed to trust the person you're mm-hmm. with, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that person is supposed to, at least my understanding, be present in case anything goes wrong,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, how can he do the safe word or the I can't reach the thing if she's not there
right.
to see it or hear it?
Especially
right.
when you're using a rope like this.
What
and
if
I'm
his
sure
hands
she would
are
agree
getting
with
numb
you.
And
knowing
he couldn't
how it turned out,
properly.
I'm sure she
20,
regrets
20
it.
Hindsight.
Yeah.
But
she
Dominic.
She didn't say she regretted anything at any point in her testimony.
Yes.
She didn't say, I'm sorry that he's dead.
She asked that? Does
she
have to go up and give that statement?
She wouldn't even cop to using bad judgment. Again, there's no remorse. Right. There's a general indifference.
So Dominic,
I don't buy that at all.
I
do think
that
there
no.
was remorse. I don't.
She did not seem
where?
Like a calculated killer.
She can have remorse in her private life, but not want to express it in front of a jury.
Mm-hmm. Where did she say, I'm just so distraught that this happened.
No one asked her that.
But
she's
that
not
would just
supposed
that
to
would just naturally come
out.
Just
naturally come
when
out.
When
exactly
the prosecutor asked her, "Do you feel like you used good judgment?" That's an instance
and
where she could have said,
at that moment.
"Yes,"
she
and I can't believe that this happened. I thought I set everything up so that
it was
a safe
accident.
And
I
yeah, there was
sorry,
none of that.
Something.
There was not any mention of any of that
right.
at any point. It just goes further to show what kind of a person she is, what her state of mind was. And I want to get back to something. I'm sorry, I'm getting so caught up in this, but Steph said something about how she'd been in that situation before, mm-hmm. so she understood it, and I think we can't forget that. She'd done this before. She knows exactly what happens when someone is being choked, so mm-hmm. I feel like she knew exactly what to do to him. And again, why wouldn't she be there for that? She knows the risks of
that. She'd done it before, and it had been safe, and that she had her faculties enough with her to move, to function. So, I mean, she knew that there was a point that you could take it to.
And he could still release himself.
Exactly.
But mm-hmm. was she tied the same way with the same knot, being by herself?
She gave an out. Supposedly, with the pheromone hitch, she right. would have given
that's,
him an
that's
out,
big
and that's
though.
On his choice.
Supposedly, because from what we saw from the knot earlier, it's really easy to untie, and it seems pretty difficult to screw that up.
Exactly. So when do we say that Troy screwed it up and not her?
Yeah.
True. Yes.
Laura D. Fair was a widow in 1860s San Francisco. A married lawyer named Alexander Crittenden seduced her, lied to her, betrayed her, and generally mistreated her. One afternoon, she boarded a daytime ferry in a black dress and veil, walked up to where he and his family were seated, and shot him in the heart. Her trial made headlines when she became a figurehead for women's rights. Susan B. Anthony and a collection of suffragettes attended her trials, where her lawyer argued she suffered from delayed menstruation, a condition which left her raving mad before each period. Progress isn't always linear. Her acquittal was considered a victory for women. Hindsight suggests otherwise. No one knows how history will judge his or her choices. Decisions need to be made according to what's right now. And ultimately, the question jurors must ask themselves is, what are we willing to tolerate? Next time on Deliberations.
Do not send a message to killers that they can get away with murder if they do it in the bedroom.
In America, we do not judge criminal actions by ignorance or intolerance.
The final sales pitch from each side.
There was one person in that room.
What happened on May 1st was murder.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and launches as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast, jury, Macklin McLaughy, Sam Britton, Sierra Marks, Lindsay Rousseau, Adam L. Sharkawi, and Alice Bowden. Courtroom, Allison Brown, Michael Cortez, Jonathan Zieger, and Michaela Fleming. Check them out in our cast gallery at deliberationspod.com. Look for me on Twitter at deliberationpod or join the Facebook group, Deliberations Room. On our next jury break, I'll be speaking with a sensitive crimes defense attorney about her experience managing a BDSM expert in a real-life criminal trial. Make sure to subscribe so you don't miss this episode. Have a wonderful week.